Welcome to Milwaukee Momcast, a podcast dedicated to real stories for real parents. Produced by Milwaukee Mom, we'll tackle a variety of topics in a way we hope will make you laugh, make you think, and remind you that this whole being a parent thing can be a little wild, but at least we're in it together. So, reheat your coffee, grab the headphones, and get comfy while we chat all things motherhood with a Midwest twist. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Milwaukee Momcast. I'm your host, Sarah, and today we are joined in studio by a dear friend, Melissa Bissing. Melissa's going to tell us all about her rather exceptional pregnancy experience, as well as tell us the story of her son, Owen, and the lasting impact he has had on the world around her. I do want to issue a little bit of a trigger warning for today's episode, friends, as this episode will discuss issues of child and infant loss. So keep that in mind as you listen. And with that, let's jump into today's episode. I am so thrilled because today our guest is my dear friend, Melissa Bissing. And Melissa has a fantastic story to tell us about one of her kids. Well, we're going to talk about all your kids. I mean,
there's a small litter.
It's kind of not fair to the other boys. But so we're going to talk about all of your kids, but we're going to talk about your motherhood journey and also the extraordinary circumstances under which you entered into motherhood and some of the challenges and the journey that you've had to take as a mom. And what you've learned in that process can really be an encouragement to others. So I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. This is fun.
Yay. Tell us about you.
Well, I am born and raised in, I take that back. I wasn't born in Wisconsin. I did. I already lied.
You already lied.
I was technically born in Chicago, but I grew up.
Oh, we won't hold that against you. It's okay.
I know. I grew up in Waukesha. I am now a single mom of four boys, raising her kids in the same neighborhood that I actually grew up in, about six blocks away from my childhood
home. Is it really that close?
Yeah, yeah. Just on the other side of the area or whatever on the subdivision, but
yeah,
my kids go to the same elementary school that I grew up to.
Know that.
Yes, I didn't go very far. I'm very much a homebody, but I just celebrated my 36th birthday.
Happy birthday!
I have four kids. My oldest is Jaden. He is 13. He's in middle school.
He's 13. I wish you guys could see me just now. My eyebrows just hit my hairline. Wow.
I can't believe it. I can't believe how old he's gotten, but 13 years immature. and then I have triplet 8-year-olds who will be 9 next month. But they are Logan and Weston. And then Owen is their triplet brother. And he passed away when he was 6 months old. But they are in the third grade and they keep me really, really busy.
I imagine.
My parents live very close to me. Very involved with my family. So you also hear me talk a lot about my niece, Gia, who am I very, very proud of.
Oh yeah. We're definitely going to talk about Gia,
but I'm very much a family person. Professionally, I work in marketing, love my job, love my people that I work with. And then I also love to write and be a part of this Milwaukee Mom community. So
we love having you.
That's pretty much it. This is what I do all day long.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. All right. So let's hop right in because I would love to hear you tell the story of your rather exceptional pregnancy experience. Now, Jaden was relatively cookie cutter, right? Like,
he was still a surprise.
It's still a surprise.
I mean, I was
yeah.
a senior in college. It was still a surprise. as far as pregnancies goes, that one was pretty standard.
Really straightforward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It was the next one that was a little bit out of the ordinary.
Yes. Yeah. So I was married at the time and we were just trying for one more. Just good old fashioned baby making.
Right.
And finally got pregnant and we were so excited. We go in for an ultrasound and they found two babies. And so we left thinking, oh my gosh, we're having twins. This is amazing.
Which is shocking in and of itself.
His brother and sister are twins. So we're just excited.
Yeah.
And they say that we have to come back right away the following week to make sure that everything is, you know, on par because I was only 6 weeks pregnant at the time. And so I come back at 7 weeks pregnant and baby A checks out fine. And I remember sitting there and she's kind of like digging around and I'm like
digging around.
Okay. And I remember thinking to myself,
okay, wait, stop. So if you said you were in at 6 weeks and she's digging around, this means that you aren't in the ultrasound where it's on the belly, are you?
No, this is the internal one. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So that had to be a good time. We're just digging around up in there. Like,
you kind of got used to it.
Check out this baby. Okay.
I kind of got used to it.
I just needed to pause for a point of clarification. All right. Continue. Yeah, so we're digging around looking for
looking for the baby B. And I remember pausing thinking, it's okay. Baby A is fine. Because I thought they were having trouble finding baby B or there was, you know, something terrible. And so I finally get the nerve to open up my eyes and look at the screen. And there was three dots on the screen. And I remember going, how does that happen? And my ex-husband puts his head in between his knees and goes, I need another job.
Oh no.
So that was our first words out of our mouth was, how does that happen? And I need another job. And this is gonna, and I'm going to admit a very, y'all can laugh at me, but I'm going to admit something on this podcast that doesn't shine me in the best light. I didn't realize that triplets could happen naturally.
No, I can't believe that.
Twins made sense. You got two ovaries, two fallopian tubes, twins, right?
Right.
Triplets.
Or like egg separates into two.
Right.
That makes sense.
I had no idea that you could have natural triplets or quads. Like that.
So
is
does
something
that mean
could
that your ovary like just did like a rapid fire of three eggs?
I have machine gun ovaries.
Yeah.
So I'm at risk of having multiples now. Like. Extra, like now that it's happened, because everybody's like, when are you going to try for the girl? I'm like, when are you going to guarantee that I'm only going to have one baby this time? And they're like, oh, yeah, we can't guarantee that. I'm like, that happened.
So that's legit what happened. You released three eggs.
Yes.
And they were all for, wow.
Yes. Machine gun ovaries.
Have you heard any statistics about what like the odds of that are? Like, is that like a one in a whatever chance? Like, have you heard anything?
I definitely asked the specialist. That was one of my very first questions.
Like how what does are this the odds?
Why me?
What is
why
going
me?
On?
And I want to say it was like 1 in 50 million.
Get out of
but
here.
But like, don't quote me on that.
Right.
It was also like 9 years ago and a lot of, you know. It,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. But it was a wild ride. So.
I'd say so.
A lot of doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of they were literally sucking the life out of me that I had to take like iron and calcium and all kinds of crazy on top of my prenatal vitamins just to keep up with
it.
I remember they said that I got to eat whatever I wanted in the first trimester because when I hit trimester 2 and 3,
okay.
I wouldn't want to eat or with the, because there's so much baby, like there's not enough room.
There's
to
just
eat.
Literally no room. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
So I remember I worked at Kohl's department stores at their corporate office and I would go and I would get like, they had the big, huge 16 inch pizzas and
I'd
get a big old slice of pizza and a baguette and butter and a chocolate pudding and a large Diet Coke. And I would eat those. I would just slam it. I remember going to the vending machine and I got a peanut butter Twix bar because I wanted a peanut butter Twix bar and I could eat whatever I wanted. And I ate it so fast. I was like, I want another one. And I just went right back and I got another one and I ate two full candy bars back to back. But like, and everybody walked around. People say like really dumb things.
Oh, you don't
really
say.
Really dumb things.
I bet.
There was another woman on the floor, the same floor that I worked on. And she was, her and I were pregnant at about the same time. But I was measuring... I measured full term at 24 weeks.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So
I've seen the picture of you, so I believe it.
My stomach went down. Like when I sat down, my stomach went to the tips of my knees. That's how I measured it.
Yeah.
Shoes didn't fit on my feet. I wore flip flops. Pants didn't fit. Clothes didn't fit. I remember walking into the motherhood maternity with my mother-in-law.
Right.
And she's like, what's the largest maternity shirt you sell? And then she's looking at me and she's looking at my mother-in-law being like, who are we shopping for? And she's like, she's pregnant with triplets. Where's the biggest shirt you sell? And I was that's pretty much what it came down to.
Yeah.
When I would just go and buy like triple XL men's t-shirts. And
then go down to the tent supply shop.
Yeah, but my belly still hung out the bottom of it. Just because it covered the front of it, it still hung out the bottom.
Because you went out so far.
Oh, yeah.
You were just out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was a fun thing to have. I, like, everybody's like, you got to be so miserable. I'm like, I am, but I'm growing babies. Like, it's
many of them.
It's kind of a fun,
lots of them,
happy thing.
It's like, pretty incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, I'm not in pain because I'm hurt, or I'm not in pain because something bad has happened. Like, I'm just growing babies, and that's kind of a really cool thing.
So wait, how old was Jaden when the triplets were?
He was 4.
So you had a 4-year-old while being very, very pregnant, like from the get-go with triplets. How did you manage that?
We played a lot of video games or downtime. When eventually I had to go into the hospital, so I was 3 centimeters dilated. I actually I must have been like 30 weeks pregnant at this time, where they said 36 was my goal. They wouldn't let me go past 36.
Yeah, 36 was the goal.
And my goal was I had to gain a minimum of 60 pounds, which...
Wait, they said they gave you a weight gain goal?
Oh, yeah.
That's unusual.
Well, because I had to eat enough to sustain them, and we had to make sure that they were growing enough.
Makes sense, I guess. Yeah.
60 pounds minimum, 36 weeks. So at the 30 weeks, I think the doctors found out that I was 2 centimeters dilated. And so I went right to the hospital because...
For bed rest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I mean, they don't really do bed rest like you think it is. I got a wheelchair ride a day. I could sit up in my bed. I could sit in a chair. I could, you know, use the restroom by myself. It was just monitored.
Okay.
They had an OR prepped and ready that they kept on reserve for the triplet mom, because if I went into active labor, it could be really dangerous. So Logan was breech. He was baby A. He was on the very bottom. But be 3 centimeters dilated. And then they're like, okay, when you get to 4, we'll deliver. I'm like, okay. I get to 4 centimeters. Well, when you get to 5, we'll deliver. I'm like, these babies are literally, like, Logan, you could feel, this is TMI, but we're all moms. It's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
The amniotic sac was like bulging through my cervix.
No, it was not.
Yeah. I joked. I was like, he's just going to like reach his hand out and wave hello or something, mom. Like, is this going to come? But where was I going with that?
I have no idea, but that's fascinating.
Jaden. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The other kid.
Oh, yeah. The big brother. He loved to come and visit me in the hospital.
So how far did you make it before it was time for triplets?
33 weeks and 3 days.
33 and 3.
Yep.
So tell us how that went down.
So I got monitored every 8 hours. And so before bed, they would monitor me. And they're like, do you feel those? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're like, you're having contractions like every 5 minutes. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I feel great. And this had been happening on and off over the last 2 weeks. Like I would have some contractions. They'd give me fluids. It'd calm down because we're just trying to keep the babies in as long as we could. And so the baby's heart rates were a little tacky, like they're a little high for what they had wanted. And I remember them calling the doctor on call. They checked me. I wasn't any more farther dilated, so it wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
Best night of sleep ever. Wake up the next morning, they're like, do you feel that? I'm like, what? You're having contractions every 2 minutes.
And I was like, so you went from 5 to 2 minutes overnight?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I feel fine. And the heartbeats were a little flat. So there was supposed to be these spikes.
Yes.
And so they were a little concerned about the babies then. So I remember the nurse rushing in the room, like she's still putting on her scrubs because she had checked me before. So they wanted the same nurse to check me again.
Right. For consistency.
I was about 8 centimeters dilated and in active labor.
Oh my gosh.
I felt nothing. I don't know. I don't know. And I remember them being
that's crazy.
No sudden movements. We're going to have some
still.
Babies. So you're going to go and you're going to change out of your clothes and into this gown. And then you're not going to get back up again. So I did. I changed into the gown. I called my then husband. Jaden Stant literally hopped up on the tables and goes, ooh-wee, we're going to have babies.
Oh,
we still joke about
cutie.
That. So the whole family got there in time and then it was a C-section. So it was always a scheduled C-section and it was always going to be some kind of NICU time. We just knew that as a being pregnant with multiples, that was just part of our birthing plan and we were okay with that.
Yeah.
So the babies were born healthy and amazing. They were about 5 pounds apiece. So all breathing on their own, all healthy, all amazing. They just needed a little bit of like nasal air. I couldn't meet them for the first day or so because I was so nauseous
from the anesthetic.
I tried real hard. They wheeled me my room my hospital bed from the recovery room into the NICU so I could meet them. And I puked. I only got to, and I was like, okay, let's just take me home. But it was a beautiful thing. Like there was just so much love.
How long were they in the NICU before they got to come home?
Let's see. So Logan and Owen were only in the NICU for 2 weeks. They actually came home on Thanksgiving Day, my Thanksgiving present. And Weston actually caught a bug from Jaden. There's actually a picture of the kiss. So Jaden finally...
Really?
We couldn't hold them right at first. So you could only like, you know, put your little finger in there. But Jaden got to hold
in like one of those little isolation chamber thing images.
Yeah, in the isolates. And Jaden got to hold his brothers for the first time, and he leans down and he gave Weston a kiss, which is so sweet. And then the next day I get a call and he puked at school. So we're pretty sure Weston just caught a bug, but so Weston got an extra week in the NICU. It actually ended up being kind of a nice transition. I had so much mom guilt, like mom guilt times three, because
I bet
I'm not enough. God gave me two of a lot of things, but three of nothing. So I literally did not have enough to give my kids.
God gave me two of a lot, but three of nothing.
So I'm like, it was kind of a nice transition, and just bringing the two home and kind of getting them acclimated and figuring out feeding schedules and all that. Because when you're in the NICU, I only had to like tap in when I wanted to or I could, and you go home and it's all you now.
Right.
And they were still underweight, so it was feeding every 4 hours, whether we would wake them up to feed them to make sure that they had enough weight gain and all that kind of stuff. So, then Weston came home at about 3 weeks.
So within a month of them being born, now you've got all three babies at home. You've got a four-year-old. And you're just
in time for Christmas.
Just in time for the holidays, which is a super chill time of year.
Yeah.
And you're adjusting to this new crazy family structure in life.
Yeah. It was quite the adjustment. I mean, unfortunately, like I feel so bad. I remember going, Jaden's parent teacher conferences were supposed to be in the fall and they got pushed to January or February. So just after the holidays. And I remember sitting there and she's like, he doesn't know his alphabet. He can't write his name. And I'm going in my heart, I'm like, how did this happen? I mean, logically, I know how that happened. I mean,
right. But like, you know, you have that moment of going, okay, did I fail somehow or like fall short just because you were trying to like, you know, keep these three babies
or bring them into the world, the attention he needs. Like every mom's like, you go from one kid to more and you always worry about your oldest son getting left behind or not having enough time for them. Like I constantly felt like I didn't have enough to give my kids, because if three babies are crying, there was no way I could physically
It's impossible.
I used to get a lot of help from Jaden. We'd play the Nook'em Dano game, and he would go and pop the nooks. Nook'em Dano. And he'd go and go down the line and nook them all.
That's adorable.
But I also remember sitting in front of the triplets on the floor in their car seats, like, I don't know what to do. And I like couldn't hold one of them because I felt so bad about the other two. So I would just like sit there and stare at them because that felt fair.
Because that felt fair.
I wish that would probably be something that I regret of just not getting in there and taking turns.
And saying to heck with the mom guilt and just getting in there and doing what you could do.
So like that's what I do with them now. Each kid gets like a day, right? Yeah. I choose like my quote unquote favorite kid for the day, right? And he gets the extra loves and he sits on my lap and gets to pick for dinner, and we just kind of celebrate one at a time.
Yeah.
I wish I would have known that, or I wish I'd been able to embrace that without feeling so guilty about the other two. But I was so focused on making everything fair. I mean, everything was color coded. Everything was timed. Everything was documented just to keep everybody fed and organized. We actually came up with a color coding organization. So Weston was winter blue, Logan was lime green, and Owen was orange. And their blankets and their clothes and their nooks and their bottles and their little toenail polish on their little toes, because I was terrified of getting them all mixed up and raising one as the other and giving them a human complex. So I color coded everything to keep them organized.
So you've got this meticulous system where everything is timed out, everything is color coded. You're still kind of struggling with this mom guilt of trying to make sure everything is fair, and the babies are growing.
Yeah.
The babies are doing well and they're getting bigger. And then so now tell us about Owen in particular.
Yeah. So I had gotten at least to a point where I was feeling more like myself, that I actually was going to start a mom group at my church and bring some women together so that I had a support group, because not being at work anymore, you know, I needed some friends. So that night, it was a Saturday night, I had my sister come so that she could babysit the babies, but I had them all come to my house so that I wasn't far off, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah. And how old are the babies at this point?
6 months old, six and a half months old.
Okay.
So my sister and her two best friends all come to my house to babysit my kids upstairs. Us moms go downstairs and we're making iron-on t-shirts to announce our new ministry at church the next morning.
You're literally all in the same house. Like, you haven't even left the house. No. You're just on a different floor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. But that was escape. Like, that was
absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
The women left. We decided we're going to order pizza. My sister and her two friends all hang out. Tony Maroney's pizza. Like, I don't know why. I mean, I remember all of these things, stupid details. And I remember my sister looking at me being like, do you want to hold Owen or do you want to give Jaden his bath? And I said, I'll do Jaden's bath because I knew that he missed me.
Yeah.
So I'm in the bathroom giving Jaden a bath. He starts crying. I'm like, what's going on? He goes, something about angels. And he's talking about Grandpa Ticklybeard, who would be my grandpa, okay, his great grandfather, talking about why did he have to go to heaven and why did he have to die? I'm like, where is this coming from?
Just it's out of clear so blue sky, weird. He starts asking this.
Yeah. And really distraught. And wow. I was like, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And I remember coming out and talking to my sister about it and going back in. And then my sister comes rushing in and she's like, Melissa, it's Owen. You have to come. And I run into the nursery. And so Abby had dropped or had put Weston down in his crib and noticed that Owen had rolled over on his stomach. And it was just like, because they're 6 months old, is it okay that he's rolled over on his stomach or not? And she rolled him back on his back to be safe. And she found that he wasn't breathing. And so I was actually CPR certified from having to bring the triplets home from the NICU. We called 911. I brought him to the floor and I started CPR. For a long time, I thought that I messed it up. Like, I didn't do it right.
The CPR?
Yeah, because I kept counting track. I couldn't even believe that I was doing it. Giving, like, and I listened to the 911 call back, which is
really,
people might think it's sadistic. I don't know. It was so healing.
Oh, I can imagine that.
It was so healing because, you know, I'm giving orders of like, somebody get Jaden out of the bathtub, somebody call Doug, somebody, you know, and as I'm giving CPR, and then the paramedics got there and they kind of took over and I just stepped back. So now I'm stuck in the room. They're working on Owen on the floor and I can just see Weston in his crib looking up at me. And I remember thinking, I just want you out of here. Like, I just wanted to save him from the yuck that was happening. So we got him into the ambulance and we took him down. I knew it was bad. I remember sitting in the front seat of the ambulance going, oh my gosh, I'm going to be planning a funeral, aren't I? I just couldn't even believe it. It was so, and I couldn't, I'm calling people and I can't get a hold of anybody.
Yeah.
We had a four squad car escort, which, you know, firefighter, you can't say enough about firefighters and policemen today, but like the honor that I felt in that ambulance. Knowing how serious it was and the look on their faces, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're looking at me like I'm a victim. I'm a victim right now, aren't I? But not being the one that was being worked on.
Yeah.
But you knew that it was serious by the look. So the two squad cars would be in front and go up and block the intersection so that we could go through. And then you'd see the two behind us whip up in front and block the intersections up in front. And it was this whole,
it was like a choreographed kind of,
mm-hmm, just making sure that we were safe and we could get to the hospital as soon as we could. And it was kind of a long ride. I was up in Sussex and they took us down to Waukesha Memorial.
Okay.
And then they got us into the ER. I remember trying to get out of the ambulance in the ambulance bay and the doors were locked and they couldn't open up the door. And I remember screaming like, what the and it echoed in there and I felt a hand on my back and she's like, you must be mom. And I was like, Hi. I just freaked out a little bit, which
is understandable.
I couldn't believe that I wasn't freaking out yet, but you just kind of go in this like calm mode of just doing everything you can to make sure everything's okay.
It's that survival mode, that fight, flight. Was it fight, flight, freeze?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So then they got him situated and then they got him into a room and they wanted me to go in there, but I didn't want to go in the room because I was like, I just wanted to let the doctors have enough space. So I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'm just going to look out the window or look through the window or whatever. And then my ex-husband finally arrived because he was gone for the night. He was at his brother's. So he had to drive up and met me at the hospital. And I remember being so terrified that he was going to be mad at me because it happened on my watch. Like, he would blame me.
Yeah.
And I remember him putting his hand on my shoulder and he was like, you did really good, Mel. I'm proud of you. Aww. And I was like, oh, okay, good. That meant a lot because I felt like it was my fault. It happened on my dime, right? Like, it happened when I was watching. And I remember then I looked at the heart monitor. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think his heart's beating again. Cause I'm thinking this is it. This is done. This is it. He's been down for a really long time and I'm no doctor, but I watch a lot of doctor TV.
I've watched ER, man. I know these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, this is bad.
I just dated myself cause I said ER and not Grey's Anatomy.
No, I watched ER too.
Okay, good.
I did.
Well, you and I are both 36.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're the same. Yeah. So we know things.
So you're watching the monitor.
And the heart, and he had a heartbeat again. And I was like, is that, oh my gosh, are you serious? He has a heartbeat. I'm like, the whole world's changed.
Right.
I just was like, oh my gosh, okay, a game changer. And they called for children's transport. And I remember the doctor looking at me. You could tell he was really awkward. Like, he's like that super brilliant, smart guy that I want to be my doctor, but uh-huh. He needs to work a little bit on his bedside manners.
Yeah.
Right?
People skills are not quite as.
And he just looked at me. He's like, we're not out of the woods yet. There's a very high chance that his heart will stop on the ambulance ride. So you need to say goodbye. We're going to do everything we can, but you need to know we're not out of the woods. This is still very dangerous. And I was like, okay. And there was two sheriffs there. They introduced yourself, right? So I'm sitting there while they're working on Owen and he's like, ma'am, I know this isn't a good time. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm, you know, Detective so-and-so.
Yeah.
And I was like, I watch enough Law and Order SVU. Let's cut the crap. You're here to see if I did this to my son. And he's like, yeah, I am. Sorta. I'm like, okay, let's just be clear on what this is.
Right.
So they offered to give us a ride to the hospital. And at first I didn't want to ride with them. I was like, I don't want them asking me questions. I just want to get there. I'll answer their questions later. And then I remember becoming very aware of the taste of blood. And I started to freak out because when I was giving CPR, now all I could taste is blood. And I was like, I need a Diet Pepsi and I need to go. And so they got me a Diet Pepsi and we ended up getting a ride with the sheriffs, detectives, which was good because a lot of the roads were closed. And he's like, this doesn't apply to me. And he just drove around.
And
got us there where we needed to go, which was helpful. And they took us up on the magical fifth floor of Children's Hospital, which is an incredible place. And
it really is.
Worked on getting him stable. And the doctor, Dr. Meyer, came and he had said, you know, the next 24 hours will be very telling if his heartbeat stops again. Because oftentimes when your heart stops, it'll give out again. So we're going to watch him really closely and get him comfortable. And then he recommended a medical study and if we wanted to do it. And my ex-husband and I, we had our troubles and we're two very different people, but we both were so aligned and we're like, yes, science. Yes, we're going to do the medical study. And so it basically was a study that says when your heart stops, you will spike a fever because your body thinks that there's something wrong and they'll try and fight with a fever.
Oh, okay.
With adults, they know that if they keep you cold, it reduces inflammation and you have a better chance of recovery. That's why you hear about the old man who was shoveling his driveway and fell into a snowbank, had a heart attack, fell into a snowbank and lives to tell the tale. It's because he was cold.
Because he was cold.
So with children, they don't have a lot of research on if it's cold or if to keep them at 98.6 degrees. And so
that's fascinating.
We entered Owen into one of these medical studies. And so he got the cold. So he had to be kept at ridiculously cold temperature. And he would be kept on life support or in a drug-induced coma for 5 days, being kept cold. And then we would try and wake him up and see if he woke up.
Okay.
And that's kind of where my writing journey started. So once we got him situated, my kids were taken care of. I kind of sat down at my keyboard. And I had started a blog when I was pregnant with those crazy triplets. It's
right.
A way to keep all of my family
like
up to date.
Updated on all the nonsense.
Yep, shared
yep.
the crazy belly yep. pictures and the ultrasounds and all the weird things that were happening.
Yep.
And so I knew that that was the best way to call for prayer. And I sat down at the table. I had done everything that I could for my son Owen, right? I had made all the medical decisions. I'd done CPR. I got him where he needed to be. Now the only thing that I could do for my son was pray.
Yeah.
And ask for support. And so I wrote a post that said, basically told the story and asked people to think of him and to send good thoughts to us for the next 5 days. And
it went a little crazy.
It did.
Did it go viral even?
Yes, I would say that it did. We were hitting all 7 continents. This is why I'm not in geography.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. We had readers from all over the world commenting, people sending me pictures, and Orange for Owen became a thing.
Yeah.
I was getting pictures of all these triplet families really banding around and providing support. And I just kept updates on it. It was a very spiritual time for me.
Yeah.
A lot of peace came from writing and just sharing moment by moment what was happening. And so I remember even too, I was standing at one of the rounds and I could feel like Owen wasn't there. Like I could see him, I saw him, but like he wasn't there, and I could just feel like his spirit like hovering. And I knew it was inevitable. Like I knew my baby was gone. I just looking at him, like I knew by looking around the room. His dad didn't know, like people didn't know. They're all really fighting and really believing that there's a future for Owen. And I privately started talking about organ donation to the nurses, overnight nurses, and just asked that any care that he be given, if it would compromise him being an organ donor, to let me know, because I would want that to be part of my decision. And so at the end of 5 days of being on life support and sharing the story, he was slowly warmed and then taken off the paralytics, and he didn't wake up. And so you have to do two tests. So we did the first test to see if he was brain dead. And he failed.
Okay.
Which is what we thought, but you have to wait another 12 hours and do it again.
Oh, wow.
And so when they did it again, he wasn't able to come off the ventilator long enough to be able to get that brain dead diagnosis that we needed for him to be an organ donor. So we actually fought real hard and pushed for another test that they can actually take him down for an EKG, an MRI, I don't know,
one of those acronyms,
fancy tests to see if there was any blood flow to his brain. They're like, it's hard to read. It's, you know, touch and go. And we're like, we want it. His story cannot end right here. Like, because I'm looking at him, I'm like, what do you want me to do? And they're like, well, we'll take him off of the ventilator and we'll wait for him to pass. I'm like, this can't be it. Like, there's so much around this little boy. He can't be gone yet. Like, it can't be done.
His story can't be over just yet.
Yeah.
You knew it.
Yeah. So we fought and it came back. The fancy whatever
the acronym. The fancy machine with the acronyms. Yep.
Came back that he was, in fact, brain dead and we could proceed with organ donation. It sounds so silly to say this out loud, but it was the best news we'd received, just to know that something, like, that was my prayer the whole day. I'm like, something good has to come of this. Like, this is a mother's worst nightmare.
Absolutely. And I
don't wish it on anybody.
Yeah.
But staying open to being able to see anything good in the midst of bad.
Yeah.
Was super helpful, and just getting like my tiptoe forward.
Totally.
Like, not getting stuck, because it's so easy. And I've met so many women, grieving mothers, grandmothers, aunts. I mean, this affects your entire family with the loss of a child, that they get stuck in that grief and they get stuck and focused on the unthinkable happening.
Right.
There's nothing natural about a baby dying. There's nothing good about it. It's not the way that it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Parents are supposed to go before their children. The
nerd in me always remembers. Have you ever seen Lord of the Rings?
No.
No.
Sorry.
Okay. No, it's fine.
Can we still be friends?
We can absolutely still be friends. But there's this beautiful scene in the second Lord of the Rings film where the King of Rohan, his son, has died in battle. And he has just buried him, and there's this beautiful song being sung, and he's talking to Gandalf, and he says, no parent should have to bury their child. And this grown man, this king, starts breaking down, weeping, and the actor does such a beautiful job. And like, I'll never, like, I always think of that scene because A, I'm an absolute uber nerd, but B, because it's just such a true statement. You know, no parent should have to bury their child, because it breaks you, you know, and it's not the, like you said, it's not the way it's supposed to be. But you touched on something that I really want to go down that direction, because Owen's legacy has really been all about finding those moments of light here, there, finding a new one, and growing that over the course of the next several weeks, months, and now years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us some more about that?
Yeah. It started with the organ donation. So we were able to donate his heart, liver, and kidneys. And it became
Oh, wow.
it became like this outward, like I started praying for these other three children and it kind of started to grow. And let's be real, I also got myself into therapy right away.
Good.
I remember looking, I'm like, I don't have the privilege to fall apart right now. I don't have the privilege. I have three other boys that need my help. I have a family. I'm a stay-at-home mom. Like I have to keep together.
Yeah.
And that also helped. But I started focusing my energy on anything positive. The blog that I wrote and sharing my story was also incredibly healing. I started on the day he passed, there was about 1.5 million hits on the blog.
Oh my goodness.
And so it grew, like that's where I'm like, yeah, it went viral. Hearing the words of people resonating with my words.
Yeah.
Was also like, okay, if I can break myself and bare my heart on the internet and somebody else, and this helps even one other person, my words are worth it.
It's, yeah.
It's worth the vulnerability that I'm putting myself out there for.
Yeah. It's just that little, it's that little bit of something positive right now that yeah. probably was very sustaining.
Yeah. We started getting letters in the mail because I, like I said, it was just a stupid little WordPress blog to keep my family. So like yeah. I had my Gmail email on there. People found my home address.
Oh.
Like, because it wasn't intended to yeah. go viral. Like it was just yeah. this small little thing. And so I started getting mail and I remember coming back from the post office with like literally brown paper bags filled
oh my goodness.
With mail from people. And one of them was signed. It was $100 cash. Mm-hmm. And it was signed, "Thank you for putting words to the story I was never able to tell myself."
Oh.
Signed anonymous. Like it grew. And so I knew that my words, I knew that this story, while it broke me,
yeah.
was healing others.
Yeah. Who had and been through something similar but weren't able to kind of feel that processing mechanism yeah. You think, or the closure, well, or
it's a very private thing that happens. And I think with moms, that mom guilt even gets even worse.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're supposed to protect your baby. That's your one job.
Right.
Your one job is yeah. to make sure that your kids are safe and healthy. And it's like the ultimate failure.
Mm.
And it's the ultimate sense of like emptiness. That I often thought, because I had the triplets, I couldn't imagine some parents, like some singleton moms, go home with nothing.
Yeah.
They go home to an empty home. They go from people thinking they're a mom to now being invisible. Like nobody knows they're a mom.
Mm.
And I often feel that way with the triplets. Like, yeah, I'm a triplet mom and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
But nobody sees it. They're constantly called twins. And
I have never, you have always introduced the kids as the triplets.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Oh, yeah.
You refer to them as the triplets all the time.
I gave birth to them. Yeah. I think I get the credit.
Absolutely.
But they, like in school, they'll be like, oh, the twins. Yeah. And I had to, like, I used to correct them all the time because it just killed me. And I was like, no,
they're triplets. Triplets.
Their brother passed away. But then, like, the look on their face, it was almost like their world shattered. Like, then they would, like, look at me with pity. And I, like, broke them. Like, yeah. letting them tell, it became hard because my truth became something that nobody wanted to talk about.
It's like you were showing them your membership card to the club that nobody wants to be in.
Right. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
And they think about how it's so sad for them. But I'm like, it has nothing to do with you. It's my story. So, or my kid, I don't know. But I stopped correcting them because people would look at it, just it looked like I was hurting them. So I just didn't correct them. And
right.
when I introduce them, I'm always like, I've got four kids. I always say I have four kids.
Mm-hmm.
I allow myself the privilege of who do I want to tell my story to or not? Like, do I care enough about you to tell you? Or do you just say, yeah, I got three kids. It's fine. Like, you don't matter enough to go into that part of me. And over that's probably how it's changed the most.
That's really interesting.
I felt like I wore it like my badge of honor. In fact, I wore orange every single day after Owen passed away for as many days as he was alive. And back then, orange was not a popular color. Let's just be real.
It's a tough one to wear for a lot of folks.
Yeah, but yeah. I wore it like my badge of mourning. Like
yeah.
some cultures, they have special garbs and special clothing to wear when you're in a time of mourning. That was my way of telling yeah. the world about my son. And nothing was harder than my sweet babies and I at Walmart checking out. And Jaden going, my brother died. Okay. And the cashier then just looks at you with this pity and this heartbreak. And it totally is. Like, I'm not even saying they did anything wrong. Like, it totally is. But it brought it all back for me every time. And had she acted like it would be no big deal, I'd be mad about that too. Because let's be real. Like, there's really no right answer for that.
Well, you actually wrote about Owen's story for the website a couple years ago. And you actually wrote it on the coming up in the October of the fifth year after he had passed away. So it's been several years even since then. And we'll put the link to this post in the show notes. But one of the things that you wrote in this that I really... is jumping off of what you're saying right now is that there are no words in our vocabulary to express the loss of a child. And then you say, I'm 5 years out from the worst day of my life. Now it's more than five.
Mm-hmm.
You say, recovery doesn't happen overnight and it certainly never ends. I am perpetually in recovery from the loss of my son. It's a forever process. So what has recovery looked like as you've gotten past the initial weeks, months, and even those initial couple of years after Owen's passing, what has recovery looked like since then for you and your family?
It's been a journey, that's for sure. And it certainly hasn't been a linear journey. It has a lot of ups and downs, a lot of smiles, a lot of tears. Most helpful is that I learned how to vocalize what I needed from the people in my life. So I needed a day every year to celebrate him. And on Owen's angelversary day, the day he passed, I needed a party. And that's what I needed. And I couldn't be alone. I just knew like that's what I needed. And I got good at that. And that brought me a lot of help because your family and your loved ones only want to be helpful. And they only know how to be helpful if you tell them what you need.
That's a really good point.
But sometimes it's hard. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know what I need, but it's not this. And that's even helpful to
never
the people
been
who
mind
are
bringing
to...
in the, you know, like the guilt for asking for this. And I should be able to blah, blah, you know, that same old song and dance.
And there's always that pressure. I've always felt the need of like, when are you going to be over this? Like, when is too like, when is it not about your son anymore? When does it start to be about someone else? And you start to feel a little bit guilty about wanting to honor somebody who's been gone way longer than he was ever on this earth. And so you start to feel a little guilty. Like that's how the first couple years was just making it had to be about him. I needed it to be about him to then starting to realize like, I'm feeling a little selfish now. Like so much has happened. There's other kids who have passed since then.
Yeah.
And it's their turn. It's their turn. To now knowing like it's okay. Owen will forever be a part of me.
Yeah.
Owen will forever be a deal for me. And it's kind of funny how I kind of start to thinking like, well, maybe I don't need to tell that story anymore. There's other stories that I can tell. And then an opportunity like this presents itself. And I'm like, you know, no, Owen's story is just always Owen's story.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to be okay with that. Pretty like the days, there used to be more bad days than good days. And then eventually they started evening out and maybe it was half and half.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon there was more good days than bad days. And now it's kind of like I get my one day a year to be sad. And that's really all I need. And I just remembered to try not to judge myself. And just to allow myself whatever it was that I needed, whether it was more time or less time, whether it was more orange or less. This past year, I just decided I was going to take my kids on an Owen day. And we did everything.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We did everything orange. We went to Sky Zone. We ate at Orange Leaf.
Oh, that's cool.
We had an orange dinner. I can't remember what it was. But like we.
Your kids, you get carrots and squash and
Cheetos.
And Cheetos.
Cheez-Its. Now we're talking carbs.
I love how you went to cheese and I'm over here thinking about the orange vegetables. You're a much better person than I am.
I think it's the other way around. Oh, because of feeding the kids. I was like, I fed them what I wanted to eat.
And then you also launched the Orange for Owen and the ornament drive too. Can you just tell us briefly what that's all about?
Yeah. When Owen passed away, I received all of this money. I felt that I needed to do something again, positive and outward, anything good, something good had to have come from this.
Yes.
And so a friend of mine, Sarah, her and I worked together, and she goes, you know, the biggest lesson that Owen taught me was to be generous. Mm-hmm. He literally gave his organs to another person.
Have you gotten to meet them, by the way?
I have.
All three?
No. So I've met Josie, who is Owen's heart recipient. She lives in Minnesota. We've actually met in person several times.
Really?
Yeah. She calls me. She FaceTimes me.
How old is she?
She's a year older than the triplets. So she's 9, almost 10.
Wow.
She's amazing. She's super sweet. And she calls me. She FaceTimes me and just wants to talk all the time. And we talk about like JoJo and... I don't know girl things because I'm like, I don't know Josie.
Is that the performer with the bows?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I have boys too. I don't know these things.
I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Josie taught me.
There's people listening right now that are like screaming at their speakers. It's JoJo. Is it Siwa? Okay. Keep going.
Organ donation. Oh, so she said the one thing that she hopes her son learns is how to be generous and the importance of helping others. Because mm-hmm. through like the Mr. Rogers things, like look for the helpers.
Yeah.
There were so many helpers throughout this whole story. So we decided, but how do you teach kids how to be generous? There's not a lot of service projects that are aimed for children of young ages. They can't go into soup kitchens. Right. They can't, you know, they're too young to rake leaves.
They're not going
to
go build a house for Habitat for Humanity.
Right. They pretty much could only do is ring the bell for the Salvation Army, which is great. But like, we wanted more mm-hmm. opportunities mm-hmm. for our kids. So we decided to organize and design service projects that kids could do. And so the first one that we did was the ornament drive. And we do benefit that for ERA's network. And we make handmade ornaments for the low income elderly and senior or grand friends, as I call them, in the greater Waukesha County. And that's something like everybody loves kids' ornaments. Those are my favorite. Like the uglier the ornament, my favorite one. I'm not kidding you. One of my favorite of all time ornaments was a reindeer that had about 17 eyes on it.
17 eyes.
It was the hideous, most amazing thing. And my favorite is there is always a kid. You hear the blood curdling scream from across the gym that they learned something. They wanted to take their present home. And mm-hmm, their mom said, mm-hmm. No, you're going to give it away. And they cry. Ugh. But that's my favorite because that's why we're doing it. Yeah. Is to get kids to think outside of themselves and yeah. for someone else.
Yeah.
And we start talking about like, what do you think a grandpa would like on his ornament? And what does that look like? And start getting sweet. Kids to think outside of themselves.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And it's, you know, just another testament to the, you know, how you said how Oren's story is continuing to bring light and find, like how you said his story can't be done yet. There's still going to be things that are going to need to be bright and light about this kid because mm-hmm. he's just such a bright and light kid. And one of the things that you touched on was the public nature in which you ended up processing and sharing Owen's story as it was happening. And I know we kind of talked offline before we started recording about one of the things that took place that ended up being a learning experience for you and your family, but that it's a message that you kind of have for parents as well that you discovered.
So like I had said before, my blog was intended just to share with family and uh-huh. not really to be that way. And it soon grew and there are subscribers. Well, I wasn't necessarily paying. I bore my heart and my soul and pictures of my kids on that on the internet.
And this was what year, just so for context?
It would have been 8 years ago. So 2011.
2011. Okay. So this was 2011. Got it.
And I remember getting an email asking, is this your picture? And it was a picture of Wes or Logan. It was a picture of Logan in the ICU. Yeah, why? And she goes, well, I think my friend is very sick. I think she's pretending to be pregnant. She says that she gave birth to the baby preterm and the baby passed away. And all of a sudden, this whole story enveloped that this woman had taken pictures of my ultrasound pictures and pictures of Logan, faked a pregnancy, and used Logan's picture at the funeral. And there was a picture of Logan blown up at a funeral.
Like an actual real life in person funeral.
Yes.
With a picture of your son.
My son.
And it was in his isolette.
Yes. And it was printed in an obituary on a funeral website. And I was like, the sick and twisted part about it is that his brother passed away and he's live and well.
Wow. So this just was a random email that somebody sent to you after they started suspecting that this person was something was off.
She was thinking it was off. And so she did a reverse Google image search and found the picture on my blog and wanted to confirm if this was actually my picture. But I reached out to the funeral home and she's like, I know this. It sounded unfamiliar because it was over the Iowa-Nebraska border. And so she said she was from Iowa and she said that she gave birth in Nebraska and was waiting for the death certificate and they had the funeral in Iowa. Because it was across the state lines, that's how she ended up with this funeral. The woman at the funeral home was just aghast. She was so appalled and so apologetic. She pulled the picture down right away.
And this happened at what point in your timeline? So like how long after Owen passed did these things, were these things brought to your attention?
I think it was probably within the first year. It was very...
So not only are you having to deal with, you know, your mourning, your kid, but now you've got somebody using the photo of your other child. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's the lesson that can be taken away here other than the fact that hurt people hurt people?
Right? that's a good point. I always now, I watermark all my pictures and I am very cognizant now about the pictures that I choose to share. Yeah. Like I just have to know anything that you put out there, somebody will or could steal and use as their own.
Right.
I mean, that's just one incident of my pictures being taken. My ultrasound has been used several times. I think two or three other times I've had individuals reach out to me saying, like, is this your ultrasound? I'm like, you can see my name on it. Yeah.
And they they didn't even take your name off? No. Oh my gosh.
And I was like, yeah. And so people have been using it to fake pregnancies.
Come on.
To the point where I actually took down my personal blog. Because it just got to be too much for me. Because Google, the way that Google works, right? So people are searching and finding my pages and my blogs have a lot of views. So you do a
it's Google prioritized. Image
search for a triplet ultrasound. My uterus is on the internet. And so I just kind of decided like I didn't want to do that anymore. And I took it down.
Well, if nothing else, that's the lesson for our kids, right? We try to teach them for, you know, all this time, like, listen, forget diamonds. The internet is forever. You put something online, it is there forever. And now you can literally say to your kids, look, mommy's uterus has been stolen on the internet forever. So, you know, being mindful about what we're putting out there and where is so important. All right, today's My Milwaukee Mom Moment comes from Marnia in Waukesha. I love this one. This is really fun. All right. You know those little those postpartum butt pillows that you have to sit on, the donuts? Yeah. Okay. So she says, my daughter found my inflatable ring for post-pregnancy support and decided it was a pool floaty. Somehow she got it around her head and then got it stuck while trying to shimmy it down her body. After pictures, we had to cut it off. My favorite part is that she says after pictures.
Obviously.
Like every good mom.
You have to take the picture first.
Because I'm picturing this poor little thing with like, it's like around her body like a little tutu.
Oh my gosh. Probably screaming and crying and it's taking you a half second to realize like what is around her body.
At least she didn't make it into the pool.
This is very true.
Right?
They're very true.
She could have gone in the bathtub and just kind of like floated around.
I have a similar picture
with the butt donut on her.
Oh my gosh. Like in the bathtub, just hanging out.
Right.
I have a similar picture of Weston with a hanger on his head. Like he tried to put it over his head and he's screaming bloody murder.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, hey, just pause. Just hold for on, a second. Just a hang second. On. Hang on. Hold we still. Gotta make memories. We're making memories.
I love it. Well, that's today's My Milwaukee Mom Moment. All right, well, Melissa, as we get to wrapping up today, tell me an unpopular opinion.
Not everybody has to be your friend.
Oh, boy. I've said it before and I'll say it again. That's so hard for a type 3 like me to listen to.
You gotta pick and choose who you let in. Like, you are a precious being and you are meant to be wonderful, light shining things. And not everybody's going to see that. And that's a privilege.
That's a much nicer way to put it.
Getting to know you is a privilege.
You too. Aww. All right. Tell me your My Milwaukee pick. This could be an experience, a brand, a business, a place to eat, a thing to do in the greater Milwaukee area that you love.
I have to say my heart is in Lake Country. I love being
that's a Milwaukee on the area. Water. It counts.
I was like, I love it. I live right on the Waukesha and I recently got a kayak.
You got a kayak?
I have a kayak, a bright red, sexy kayak I got
you
for
have
Mother's
a sexy
Day.
Sexy kayak.
A cup holder for my beer in front and a cup holder for my water down below. And I love going out on the creeks and on the lakes in Lake Country on my kayak.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Can I come kayak with you sometime?
Heck yeah, I got two. We'll go.
Remind me to tell you the story once of when I got into a canoe 6 months pregnant in a river that was low because there hadn't been enough rain and we kept scraping. It was bad.
That's okay. I went over a dam with my kayak.
That's a story for a different day. Okay, tell me what's in your cart. This could be something that's either hanging out in your Amazon cart that you haven't pulled the trigger on yet, or something that you've recently bought that you're like, this is my jam.
I have three outfits for my niece, Gia, for her first birthday, because girl clothes, they just all have to be bought.
They're adorable.
Yes.
I'm a fellow boy mom, so I understand. There's just something about them. They're just so precious.
The frills and the bows and the glitter and the little baby jeggings.
So cute. Yeah. So cute. That's one of my favorite things about your Instagram is your daily selfie with Gia.
My sister says I might have to retire that when she turns one. I don't think that has to happen.
Is there a statute of limitations?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I'm the auntie. She doesn't get to tell me.
Auntie privilege.
Yes.
So tell us what's coming up for you. What's anything exciting coming up for you? And where can people find you if they want to get to know you better?
Well, you can always find me on the Milwaukee Mom website. My profile is up there with a lot of writing, blogs, things that I've done.
We'll link your profile in the show notes because we definitely want people to read not only your stories about Owen, but some of the amazing encouragement that you've been to moms on our website for the last 4 years.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just going to be over here doing my mom thing, trying to be the best mom that I can for my boys. Pretty soon you'll see me at baseball games and footballs. I'm my kid's number one fan, so that's really close to my future.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to take some time out of your very busy schedule to come and chat with us today to tell Owen's story and to continue to share the light that he has been since the day he was born. Yes. And your other boys are pretty great, too.
They are. They are. Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. It's been so much fun.
Have a lovely day. Oh, sorry. That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. For more information on what you just heard, check out the show notes and find us on Instagram at Milwaukee Momcast. If you enjoyed this episode and know someone who should tune in, please share it. Grab a screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories and tag us so we can say thanks. Even better, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes, which helps us more than you realize. We'll look forward to you joining us on our next episode of Milwaukee Momcast.